The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest today from Money.com. Our first article up is titled, "The Average Credit Score Just Fell at Fastest Pace Since the Great Recession." This article by Adam Hardy. In another indication of a puttering economy, the average credit score in the U.S. has fallen by 2 points since this time last year. The credit scoring firm FICO said Tuesday that the average credit score for all U.S. consumers is now 715. That's down from 717 logged in October of 2024. According to separately released FICO data, the decline marks the first time since 2009 during the Great Recession that the average FICO score had fallen by 2 points within 1 year. FICO scores range from 300 to 850, and a score of 715 is considered to indicate, quote, good credit overall, but the 2-point decline in consumers' collective score is raising alarm bells. Each year, average credit scores tend to rise, sometimes by as much as 5 points. Any decline is rare, and 2-point declines are especially so. The reason behind the decline is that more Americans are falling behind on many of their loan payments. Delinquency rates on auto loans, credit cards, and personal loans are at near their highest level since 2009, economist Amy Cruz Cutts says in the FICO report. These warning signs are more consistent with an economy in recession than one still in expansion, she says. It's important to note that a U.S. recession has not been officially declared, though economists are growing increasingly wary of one. Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's, says the odds of recession in the next 12 months are now uncomfortably high. Gen Z's credit takes an outsized hit. Just as Gen Zers are starting off their financial lives, their credit scores are getting clobbered. Born between 1997 and 2012, Gen Z borrowers have an average credit score of 676, according to FICO. That's 39 points lower than the national average. While younger consumers' credit scores always tend to lag behind those of older consumers, the average score for these young borrowers also fell more than others, too, dropping by 3 points since last year. Experts say missed federal student loan payments are largely to blame for falling scores, now that delinquencies are being reported to the credit bureaus again after a 5-year pause. Tommy Lee, Senior Director of Analytics and Scores at FICO, suggests the issue could get worse before it gets better. Additional student loan delinquencies are expected over the next few months, as not everyone who has missed student loan payments has been reported as delinquent yet, Lee says in a FICO analysis. Federal student loans are unique from other items on one's credit history, like credit cards or auto loans. For most loans, delinquencies are broken up into 3 categories, 30 days, 60 days, or 90 days. The later the missed payment, the harder it dings one's score. With these student loans, however, they get reported only once they've reached the 90-day mark. So when student loan borrowers fall behind, their scores go from no penalty one day to a harsh 90-day delinquency the next. According to research from the New York Federal Reserve Bank, a new student loan delinquency shows up on a borrower's credit report and can tank their credit score by more than 150 points, depending on their starting score. For student loan borrowers with scores lower than 620, a delinquency knocks their score down 87 points. However, for borrowers with great credit, 760 or above, a delinquency sets them back 171 points on average. FICO research suggests that a wave of new delinquencies could be coming soon, further weighing down the nation's average credit score. So far, about 2.7 million student loan borrowers have a delinquency reported, and the ramifications have already been harsh. Another 5.4 million people are at serious risk of delinquency, FICO says, because they haven't made a single student loan payment this year. Our next article is also by Adam Hardy. It's titled, Four Ways a Government Shutdown Could Affect Your Money. It's not deja vu. The U.S. is again barreling towards a self-imposed financial crisis. That's right. It's government shutdown season, and lawmakers are gearing up for a bitter showdown ahead of the September 30th funding deadline. If Congress does not pass a funding package or at least a continuing resolution that would extend the deadline, the government will shut down and critical services will halt. Republicans are currently working on a stopgap bill that would keep the government funded through November the 20th, but Democrats are digging in their heels. The sticking point is expiring health care benefits for millions of Americans receiving coverage through the health insurance marketplace, also known as Obamacare. By the end of the year, enhanced subsidies that reduce the cost of health insurance for many low-income Americans are set to expire unless Congress extends them or makes them permanent. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimated in May that the expiration of these subsidies could result in over 4 million people losing their health coverage. Democratic lawmakers are saying they won't let that happen, even if it means risking a government shutdown. We have made clear that under no circumstances will we support a partisan Republican spending bill that continues to rip away health care from the American people, House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York said on the floor Thursday. On Friday, President Donald Trump said during an interview on Fox and Friends that Republicans should forge ahead without the Democrats. Don't even bother dealing with them, Trump said. We will get it through because the Republicans are sticking together for the first time in a long time. While that strategy may work in the U.S. House of Representatives, the GOP may need some Democratic votes in the Senate to break a potential filibuster and pass a continuing resolution, setting the stage for a prolonged battle that could, at least temporarily, shutter the government. Even if the shutdown were short, experts say that the financial consequences can be disastrous. Any shutdown is a bad shutdown. Andrew Lance, a director of federal tax policy at the Bipartisan Policy Center, told Money in 2023, even if it's a one-day shutdown. That's because many government operations and agencies rely on discretionary appropriations, which is money that Congress must approve ahead of each fiscal year. About 30% of all government spending is authorized by this appropriations process, according to the center, including federal worker salaries, some benefits, certain lending programs, and more. Without a deal, many government functions that are not, quote, deemed essential to the protection of lives and property could grind to a halt during a full shutdown, Lance says. Here are several ways a shutdown could affect your money. Number one, federal workers could be furloughed or paid late. Perhaps the most directly impacted group of people during a government shutdown are federal workers and contractors who have nothing to do with the political negotiations over spending. Lawmakers still get paid during government shutdowns. According to the Department of Labor, the federal government employs almost 3 million non-military workers. On top of that are hundreds of thousands of federal contractors whose businesses in large part depend on the federal government, Lance says. When the government shuts down, almost all of them are either furloughed, which means they are told to stay home without pay, or forced to work without pay because they're classified as essential workers. A 2019 law guarantees back pay for those workers when the shutdown ends, but they are forced to make do in the meantime with no clear timeline for their next payday. One missed paycheck can be a missed payment on your car, a missed payment on your mortgage, Lance says. It can mean going into credit card debt. Given the size of the federal workforce, Lance also notes that the missed paychecks could also have a ripple effect on the local economies, with a high concentration of federal workers, given that they will likely have to curtail spending throughout the shutdown. Number two, travelers could see flight delays and closed attractions. For travelers, the good news is that air traffic control and airport security continue during a shutdown, so wide-scale cancellations and delays should largely be avoided. But that's not to say there aren't potential interruptions, Lance says. According to the Nonprofit Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, or CRFB, some TSA agents and air traffic controllers did not report to work unpaid, even though they were supposed to during the last government shutdown in 2019. That did cause some air travel delays, the CRFB says. Travelers should also note that there could be unstaffed or fully closed national parks during a shutdown. Museums, galleries, and zoos run by the federal government, such as the Smithsonian, may also be closed. Lance recommends calling to confirm in advance. Number three, government benefits might be disrupted, but not Social Security payments. Many federal benefit programs could be affected during a government shutdown, but Lance wants to make one thing clear. Social Security benefits will continue to flow. However, the actual administration of the program, including customer service and verification of eligibility, could be halted. The Social Security Administration's latest shutdown plan says it expects to keep most of its staff on the job during the potential shutdown, but will likely still furlough thousands of employees. Social Security benefits are one example of mandatory government spending, meaning the government is obligated to pay out these benefits even during a shutdown. Medicare and Medicaid benefits are also mandatory. On the other hand, food benefits through SNAP, Section 8 housing assistance, and veterans benefits may be cut off during a government shutdown. New loans and grants from the Small Business Administration, which help small businesses nationwide, would also freeze. Number four, the release of economic data may be held up. Among the long list of agencies that are hobbled by a government shutdown are ones that monitor and report on the economy, namely the Department of Labor's Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Bureau of Economic Analysis. These agencies regularly release data related to the nation's gross domestic product, unemployment rates, inflation, and more. Economists, business people, and policymakers, especially the Federal Reserve, rely heavily on this data to make decisions. When the data is released, the stock market reacts quickly, so investors also carefully monitor this information. Under a prolonged shutdown scenario, Lance says the release of this critical data could be delayed, making some investing decisions more difficult. I can't predict how markets would respond to a government shutdown, but one thing I can say is that markets do not like uncertainty, Lance says. A government shutdown and the delay of this economic data that markets depend on could add fuel to that uncertainty fire. Next up is an article from Lydiana Hall titled, "You Need a Legacy Binder of Your Important Documents." Here's what to include. It's understandable to avoid thinking about the tasks that need to be done before you die, but doing so can make things significantly easier for the people you love. Grief is hard enough. Without your survivors having to guess what your bank login credentials were or dig through every file folder in the house looking for a copy of your will. That's why creating a legacy binder is so important. This item, alternatively called a legacy drawer, is a collection of your most important documents and details. From your will and insurance policies to passwords and celebration of life wishes, the binder offers your family access to everything they should need in one place. Having a binder has immediate benefits, too, like making it easier now to talk to your loved ones now about your life insurance. Here's how to build a legacy binder. From what it should contain, to where to keep it, to who should know of its existence and location. So let's start with assembling your legacy binder. When is the right time to start? Life is unpredictable, so it's best to start building a legacy binder well before you think you will need one. Right away is ideal. Failing an immediate start, a good motivator is the approach of a major life milestone, like retiring, getting married, or having a child. Assembling your legacy binder also fits well with writing or updating your will. Don't feel pressured to have all your documents ready at the start. A legacy binder can and should be updated as your circumstances change. Begin the collection now and add to it over time. That's better than scrambling to locate everything you need in the midst of a stressful divorce or a health crisis. And the basics for your binder. Despite its name, a legacy binder doesn't have to be a literal three-ring binder, although that's certainly an option, provided that you have a secure place to store it. If you prefer a physical copy of your documents, a binder or expandable file folder with labeled tabs can help keep everything organized. You don't need to invest in a bunch of supplies, but a little structure, such as tabs or dividers for each account or set of records, will make using it easier for your family. If you lack a fireproof safe in your home, a recommended location as detailed below, consider buying a binder that is fire and waterproof, or enclose a regular binder in a special bag or box that resists those perils. That said, Many people today choose to store their legacy binder digitally. You can scan everything you need and store those files in a secure cloud folder, such as Google Drive, Dropbox, or OneDrive. This method has the advantage of being easier to update and share with family members who don't live nearby. If you need help getting started or aren't sure how to organize your information, there are plenty of legacy binder templates online, such as this one, that can help guide you through the process. If you're unsure if a hard copy or electronic legacy binder is better for you, keep in mind that it never hurts to have both for maximum protection. Naturally, you'll need to remember to keep both of them up to date. What to include in your legacy binder? Your legacy binder should include all important documents and information that your loved ones or designated others will need to manage your affairs during a medical emergency or after your death. The goal is to minimize stress and potential conflicts between family members. Here's a breakdown of what every legacy binder should include. Number one, personal information. Copies of your Social Security card and government-issued IDs, such as passport, driver's license, etc. Insurance details, policy numbers, names of policyholders, names of beneficiaries, your agent's contact information, etc. Emergency contact list. Passwords, usernames, answers to security questions, and PINs for online accounts. Second, legal documents. Will and trust documents, plus the names of your executor and powers of attorney, birth certificate, marriage certificate, divorce papers, and custody agreements. Third, financial accounts. Bank and investment account details, such as checking accounts, 401ks, brokerage accounts, etc. Credit card and loan information. Life insurance policy information. Monthly bills or recurring payments. Personal and, if applicable, business tax returns. Fourth, property and assets. Mortgage account details, if you rent your home, your rental agreement or lease should be included as well. Vehicle titles and loan information, and safe deposit box information. Storing and sharing a legacy binder. The number one rule, don't leave the instructions for assessing your legacy binder inside the legacy binder. That information won't be much help if no one knows where to find the binder or how to open it. Here's what to do when it comes to storage and sharing. Best places to keep it. Assuming your legacy binder is a physical one, keep it secure, but not secret. A fireproof, waterproof safe or filing cabinet is ideal. As noted before, if you lack such a peril-resistant location, buy a binder that resists fire and water, or enclose it in a bag or box that does so. Some people opt to keep their physical legacy binder with their attorney or estate planner. If you go that route, it can be especially helpful to have a backup, physical or digital, so your family has what they need to access when the time comes. Also, don't forget to update that copy when your information changes. For a digital binder, a clearly labeled and secure cloud folder will suffice. Well, who needs to know about it? Limit knowledge of where your binder is to as few people as possible. No need to share its location with your entire extended family. You should tell the executor of your estate and the loved one you expect to be most closely involved in managing your affairs, like a spouse, child, or best friend, if that person is not the executor. Two people with access is best for the obvious reasons of human mortality. When the binder is physical or digital, make sure that those in the loop know exactly where it's located and how to access it. The last thing you want after you've spent time organizing everything is for the binder to be locked behind an unknown password or stashed somewhere no one can find it. Similarly, don't make access dependent on a lock combination or a key cap in a location known only to you, or use biometric authentication that you can enable only for yourself. And back it up, just in case. If you opt for a physical legacy binder, it's a good idea to create a digital backup as well. Otherwise, your documents could be vulnerable to damage or loss. A simple scan of key documents saved to a secure cloud folder like Google Drive, Dropbox, or OneDrive can give you peace of mind that your documents won't disappear when needed most. If you don't have a scanner or printer, most smartphones have built-in tools or apps that make it easy to scan and upload documents. And as we wrap up our episode today, we'll try to get in most of this last article. This article is titled, Tariffs Trigger the Sharpest Drop in Online Spending in Over a Decade. This article by Pete Grieve. E-commerce is undergoing the biggest slowdown in over a decade as a result of tariffs on imported goods and related economic uncertainty, according to a new report from a management consulting firm. For the first time since the survey's 2012 inception, consumers report that their online purchases have declined across all product categories except groceries, which remain flat. The largest declines in online shopping were for big-ticket items, including furniture, home furnishings such as rugs and window treatments, large electronics, and sporting goods. The shares of consumer self-reporting recent purchases of these items fell by double-digit amounts since the July 2024 survey, according to the report. Cosmetics, 34% purchased in the past 12 months, down from 44% in the last year's survey. Office and home office supplies, 24%, that's down from 37%. Sporting goods, 18%, down from 30%. Furniture, 18%, down from 28%. Home furnishings, 18%, down 28%, and large electronics, 15%, which is down from 25%. Well, we'll have to edit this article today just because our time has run out for this episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters, underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. Thanks again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.